Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is AJ Signeri. Today's show on diversity in college tennis with AJ and Jason, we're going to be talking about tennis recruiting on a domestic level, meaning how do college coaches recruit just within the United States. And we're going to be discussing about that. Between Jason and I, we have coached at many levels. Like Jason, I have coached at the junior and community college level, and I'm currently an NCAA Division III coach. And so if you're here to call in, please call in on the show. This show is a hat tennis show, and you can go to Facebook and like the hat fan page, and you can also you can follow on Twitter regarding hat tennis as well. So please call in if you have any questions regarding college recruiting and how do coaches fill in a criteria when it comes to recruiting. So with that being said, let me give you my perspective as a NCAA Division III college coach. When we look at players, we look at players in many different facets. We look at, obviously, their talent. We look at things on, you know, what their rankings are. We look at how they play within their region, why be my region. Things like, you know, the South, Great Lakes, Northeast, Northwest, things of that nature. And what we also look at when we look for recruiting is how do players compete against other opponents. We might be looking at two people at the same time. Player A could be beating player B in X amount of tournaments or vice versa. So we take that in consideration too. Some of us in the coaching community utilize, on the collegiate level, we utilize a program called tennisrecruiting.net. That's a little plug there, tennisrecruiting.net. And what the database there shows is seniors all the way down to the sixth grade level. And so what we do is we look at the profiles and we look at, see what that player's doing and kind of figure out what their activity is historically. What have they done within the year, within the last 5 years, and who they played against and at what tournaments. And we take that in consideration as well. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, what we do is, I talk about tournaments. It really does depend on a player when they go to a tennis tournament. It could be like they can go to big tournaments like the Orange Bowl in Florida, the Easter Bowl. If they go to an international junior tournament like the Costa Rica Rice Bowl, that happens over the springtime. Are they doing stuff like that, or are they just playing in their local tournaments? Like, you know, if in a rural part of Illinois and they're playing on the 4th of July fireworks classic or something of that nature. So we look at what tournaments they play in. So those are the things that we look at. Tournaments, their talent, as well as, you know, what schools they want to look at. For me, I'm a Division III college coach. Do they want to go to a NCAA D3 school or that does not have athletic scholarships? Or are they going? Do they want to go to a D1 school, a D2 school, at the NCAA level? They want to go to a junior community college or something, another level called the NAIA, which is just between NCAA and junior college level. So we look at those considerations because there's some players that are really good, but they just want to stay home. or if they want to travel outside of, say, if they live in California and they want to come out to the Midwest, we look at those considerations as well. So again, if you have any questions regarding college recruiting to ask Jason or myself, please do not hesitate to call in, and we will answer your questions to the best of our ability. Let's see here. Hopefully we can get Jason on here on the phone right now. Hello.
Hello.
Jason.
Hey. Hey, AJ.
Hey, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good today. I had a little bit of trouble getting on the phone and on the radio, but finally made it, so I'm glad to be here.
Oh, no problem, no problem. I was just saying, as far as recruiting goes, there's a lot of things that we as college coaches look at. Obviously, we look at a player's talents, but we also look at other things, too, like tournaments they play in, how far they want to travel, things of that nature. So is there anything that you want to speak to on your experiences during your coaching career?
You know, I've had two distinct experiences with the junior college recruiting. I was fortunate to recruit male and female while I was at TJC, and then female at Lee. And then I also recruited Division I players when I was the assistant coach at Texas. It was formerly Southwest Texas State when I was there, but now Texas State University. They've since dropped their men's program. And two totally different experiences. The junior college route for us was, we were taking the people that had been told no. You're not good enough. You cannot play for this school. You cannot play for that school. You're not good enough to play Division I tennis. You're not even good enough to play Division II tennis. So they would be relegated to coming to the junior college world. And what I was trying to do there at Lee was to give them an experience that was quite similar to Division I, a college experience, since that's where I eventually wanted to end up being a college coach. So that was unique in and of itself. Now, the Division I level at the men's side, the world is full of men that want to play tennis. This is why at the Division I level, they only have 4.5 scholarships. They can fill those rosters without having to use a ton of money. Whereas on the women's side, you do have to have 8 full scholarships to get women into school. And as I know, and you know, AJ, each year, millions upon millions of dollars go unused in the collegiate world for a woman tennis player.
And let's just briefly touch on that for a moment, because that's always an interest of mine when it comes to recruiting, especially the D1 level. You know, as we know, when you and I have talked to players and saying, hey, come to our school, this is why you should come to our school, here's how our academics are, and this is our tennis program. But when you and I talk to a player, they will always ask, do you have an athletic scholarship? If so, is it full or a partial scholarship? And if it's not good enough for them, they will always default to a D1. I've always been interested in why the D1? What has the NCAA Division I tennis level, or even any athletic level, D1? How do they market themselves? What's that?
Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
What kind of marketing that conditions all these youth that wants to play Division I, even though you and I both know that getting a D1 full ride scholarship is a very small percentage versus getting a scholarship to a Division I junior community college school or a D2 school or a full ride academic scholarship at a NCAA D3 school? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on that. First is you cannot neglect the role of peer pressure in this situation. In a high school setting, on a high school team, when you have kids that are signing with Division I schools, and you're there, or you're in an academy, or you're taking lessons from a certain pro that puts kids into school, they're going to ask, well, where are you signing? Where are you signing? And if you say Concordia University, or if you say Lee College, their first response to that, most of them, the academies and such, will be, well, where is that? They have no idea. And so you, those kids want to go somewhere that people have heard of. And the second people that are at fault of that is, you know, the other sports, the NCAA Division I's, the footballs, the basketballs, the baseballs, because they're the ones that are on TV, and they lead people to believe that if you know, everybody can go to school there. And it may be so. Academically, you might be able to go to school there, but athletically, there's a small percentage of people that can play at a high level of Division I tennis. Now, that being said, what you and I offered at the small college world was something that was unique, and this is what people couldn't get, was is you and I offered a chance to win.
Exactly. And you're right on that. And so are you suggesting that maybe one of, I don't want to call it a fault, but one of the agents, if you will, that conditions these players is are the external academies that condition players to do well at a competitive level so they can go to a D1 school?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. These are, most of these academy people are people that played big time tennis at State University A or State University B, and they're going to drive the players that want to get there. They want to drive the better players to go out there and participate. The academy I'm working at right now, we have a young lady that signed with Baylor University this year. She is a top-notch player, one of the top American, top Texas kids that we have in the area. One of the first that Joey at Baylor has signed, as far as an American goes, in ever since I've been associated with Texas College tennis. And you know, we're very proud of her. But as I watch these kids also at our academy, I don't see a kid yet that should not be playing college tennis. But to think that we're going to get all these kids to Baylor or one of these top five schools is incredibly kind of naive. There's just no way we're going to do that. So that's where I hope to come in and say, you know what, let's send somebody up to Concordia, or let's go up to Tyler Junior College and let's look at their program, because these programs win, and for you in life, we want you to go somewhere where you're going to win. We don't want you to go somewhere where you're going to hate your experience, you're going to hate your coach. In a year's time, you're going to call Mom and Dad up and say, you know what, Mom and Dad, I don't like this free education that I'm getting at State University. I want to come back home and party and just be a regular Joe Bag of Donuts.
For those listening in, you can always call in to ask Jason my questions at 714-583-6853. Now, Jason, I too agree that the academies and certain tennis facilities around the country, mostly in the United States, do what you have suggested. I have seen tennis facilities in Illinois where they will tell their players that if you do these things, you will go to X D1 school. And that's the only offers they give them. They don't give them other options, even though the community college down the road is a great tennis program, or, you know, they can go down a few miles down the road to another, like a D2 or D3 school that's also very successful. And honestly, I feel that's more of a shame, because you are limiting a youth, saying if you don't do well, then you can't get into school based on this athletic scholarship. So do well and go to the Stanfords, the UCLA, the Tennessees, the Georgias, the University of Illinois. If not, then, you know, kiss your playing career goodbye. Which I think is very bad, because as we both know, there are a lot of good small schools and D2 schools that could grind out any D1 school.
Oh, so true, AJ. Let me ask you a good question, AJ. I've got a curious question for you. I mean, in regards to Concordia, you would personally consider that a top-notch school, right?
Yeah, the tennis program, both on the men and women's side at Concordia University of Wisconsin, which is just north of Milwaukee, is a very competitive school. We are really on the cusp of being right up there with the Kalamazoo College, Washington University in St. Louis, DePauw, Gustavus Adolphus. We're almost there to get national rankings and all that. So we're kind of in this in-between state of being rolling with the big boys and just being beating the other, I don't want to say lesser-known programs, just a little bit more average, if you will, tennis program. So, yeah, I mean, Concordia is a very competitive tennis program. This season, we played two different D1 schools. We played a cross-town school, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and we also played George Mason University in South Carolina. And even though we lost both times, I was very proud with my ladies. They grinded out each point. In fact, my number six player, who did lose to George Mason's six, went deuces like four or five times. And my player was upset over that, but I told her, I'm like, you know, you shouldn't be upset because you went deuces four to five times with a former 21 in the country. And not everyone does not get a chance to do something like that when you don't realize who the opponent across from you, who they are. And after I told her that, she went from being sad to lose being, oh, look what I just did, and was very happy that day. So to answer your question, yeah, Concordia is a very competitive program, and it is going to be right up there amongst the ranks in known D3 program, tennis programs.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, we also at Lee, we played Division I schools. That was basically our fall schedule. We traveled out to UTEP and played UTEP, New Mexico State, Northern Arizona. We got fortunate to play Arizona while we were out there. Another small school, Tarleton State, would travel out there. We went to Baylor and played all the Big 12 schools that would come in, TCU, SMU. We had Georgia was there. We traveled up to Stephen F. Austin, and we played the directional schools in Texas. So now I sold my schools on, or my kids on that, that come in and play the fall, you'll get to play the top-notch Division I schools. The spring, again, was, you know, if we could find a Division I school here and there to play us, that was great. And that was a recruiting tool that we used because we tried to associate ourselves with the Division I school, that that's where you wanted to go, so we might as well play them and see where you're at. And it worked out well for us.
Jason, I think, how about you and I explain to the listeners, you and I are throwing around terms like D1, D2 schools and all that. So how, for our listeners' sake, how about we explain to them what those mean? Not only as like what it means for sports, but, you know, why is like Stanford a D1 school, and why is Concordia a D3 school, and why Lee College is a what we call a JUCO school. So is that okay?
Yeah, you bet. Go ahead. You want to start with D1s? You want to chime in on that?
Let's go on down. So when we say Division I school, how schools in athletic programs are divided up is mostly on student population size. The D1 schools are your bigger, well-known schools, University of Illinois, Stanford, UCLA, Harvard University. Baylor, those are all Division I schools, and they have a lot of money. Mostly it's corporate-supported. A lot of alumni support as well. D2 schools are also fairly decent-sized schools, but a lesser student population. Your D2 schools would be your Upper Iowa University, your Lewis University. Those are
But on the athletic side, D2 schools are very few and far between. In fact, let's look at Upper Iowa University for a moment. Their closest tennis program, they just have a women's tennis program, the closest match they have to them is like Nebraska at Kearney, which is like a few hours away. And then their next closest match is over in Pennsylvania. So as you can tell, it's a very less populated athletic program. Your D3 schools are your smaller schools, and they're mostly private schools. And I will note that NCAA Division III schools do not offer athletic scholarships whatsoever. The NCAA has said that any Division III school in the NCAA will not offer athletic scholarships. So Division I, Division II do offer athletic scholarships, full and partial. So your Division III schools would be like Swarthmore College out in Pennsylvania, Concordia University, Wisconsin, near Milwaukee, Kalamazoo College in Michigan. Those are examples of that. And junior colleges are just that. They're two-year schools. Jason was with Lee College down in Texas. Tyler Junior College is also in Texas. So any community that has a community college or it's called or also a junior college are just your two-year schools. And they have athletic programs, and those are divided up, Division I and Division III, in what is called the NJCAA. Division I athletic programs, like Lee, offer athletic scholarships. Is that correct, Jason?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We were able to offer three full scholarships and six partials. At the JC level, we have the 25% rule that only allows you to allow have 25% of your total scholarships go to internationals, which for us would be two. We gave the third one to the best American player. We had, I think we've got six junior colleges in Texas. There are about six in Florida, and then the rest are spread out. Arizona, New Mexico, Oklahoma. We got some up north in Michigan, Illinois, all the way over to east side of the U.S. in New York. Kansas is a big player, and Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama. And as far as I know, the junior college level is the only one that offers both men and women three and six. You know, at the Division I level, it's different. So you got eight and four and half scholarships. But listen, I was going to let you know, and also about the Division I level, there are directionals out there. And what I mean by that is here in Texas we have Northwest Louisiana State. We have Southeast Louisiana. Anything that associates a direction with it, North Florida, West Florida, that's what I mean by directional school. Those schools may have some good players up at the top, but not necessarily as deep as a D1. I found that at the D2 level, probably the top 10 teams, maybe even top 15, can go toe-to-toe with a lot of the directional schools out there and give them a good run for their money. D3, my experience with the D3 level I found that there were very good players at D3. They just didn't want the pressure and the workout schedule that there was at the Division I level. But they're super smart kids. The NAIA tended to be kind of an international semi-pro league, is basically what it was to me, the top schools. There weren't a lot of Americans associated with that. So, but you're right on in your description of those programs. There's a top, you know, we got a top 75 as far as institutions go at the Division I level, and then each has their own ranking system. And it's tough. If you're not ranked, you're not going to get the better players, that's for sure. You've got to really be a great coach and recruit well.
Yeah, and as I explained also, the talks within the NCAA is this distinction that everyone outside of NCAA D3 offers athletic scholarships. And there's always a continual debate on should the NCAA allow D3 schools to have athletic scholarships Or the other part of the debate is, since there's few and far between NCAA D2 schools in the country, merging both D2 and D3 as one, and then possibly offer scholarships in that, offer scholarships through that route.
Well, help me out here, AJ. Is Concordia, is it affiliated with the Lutheran religion? Is that what it is?
It is. It's Missouri Synod is what it's through.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. I got a couple of questions for you. And, you know, I never had to recruit the D3 level. But, you know, I'm curious, did you get the top Lutheran athletes?
No.
I mean, were people obligated to say, you know what, we are Lutheran. We believe in God. Concordia is a great place. Let's send our daughter there.
No, there are some of my players who are Lutheran or some sort of part of the Protestant religion. There is a spiritual component at Concordia. In fact, our president is Reverend Dr. Ferry. Even our own president is a pastor. We have a chapel on site. In fact, every Wednesday on campus is a noon mass dedicated to the athletic department. And I will say that before we conduct our matches, we do pray just to pray for our players, our opponents, and wishing that everyone is safe and does well. So
we do that.
What's that?
So I was going to say something we do at Lee as well. For the 11 years I was there, my first group of girls, that was one of their traditions they once set in was to say the Lord's Prayer. Now, later on, I learned that, you know, we weren't necessarily in the right there with the separation of church and state, since we were accepting government money, a little bit different situation than you. So we had to remove it for the moment of silence. But I could say this now. I always said the Lord's Prayer during that moment of silence, and I kept that moment of silence until I was done, and then we moved on from there. So I think that's important, the spirituality inside of this. People need to know that you're good-hearted as a coach, for sure.
Yeah, and we do our prayers publicly, even for playing a University of Wisconsin Milwaukee school, you know, and we're at their site. You know, we do it publicly.
Okay, so AJ, let me ask you another question. So you give academic scholarships. Are you getting the top Lutheran academic people out there in America?
No, we're not. We don't just focus just on the Lutheran athlete. We recruit everybody and anybody that is a good academic student.
Okay, so, and just hear me out here, AJ. You don't get the top athletes because you don't offer athletic scholarships.
Correct.
And you don't get the top academic scholarships or Lutheran academic students out there, and yet you have a program that's on the verge of being nationally ranked. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, what I try to instill with my players is, you know, visually show them like where we are at and where everyone else is at competitively within our division. And you know, I just keep reminding them that, you know, we currently hold 12 conference titles. You know, we just won our conference title last year at our tournament. And, you know, we had a 10-1 conference record. And I just explained to them, like, you know, we don't get 12 conference records because everyone likes us. We get 12 conference record titles because we're doing something right. And if we continue on this path and we want to do well, we have to train in order to be the next best tennis program in the Midwest, if not nationally. So we played schools like University of Wisconsin Whitewater. That's ranked 21 in the country as a NCAA Division III athletic program. When we played them, my ladies tried to play at their level. And even though they were not at par with them, they still did their best, and they see the measuring stick finally and saying, here's how well I play, now here's how much I need to practice in order to beat a program like Whitewater.
Yeah. So how many hours a week do you spend recruiting, AJ?
Oh, goodness. When I'm in season, I probably spend about 2 to 4 hours just going to, like, tennisrecruiting.net or calling my contacts, visiting friends around the Midwest or coaches who I've known. When I'm off-season, which I'm currently off-season, I probably will add another 2 hours on top of that where I'm going to tournaments now. I will go talk to families, have a bit more time traveling, things of that nature. So, recruiting's all the time.
I'm at. I had a famous coach, Chuck Greasy, who was the men's coach at Clemson for years, and now is over in Asia helping them turn around their tennis programs over there. And Chuck, I remember this. This is one of the funniest things. I asked him if he had any advice for a starting up coach, and Chuck said, he said, Jason, he said, I got something you need to know. He said recruiting is a lot like shaving. He said, if you don't shave, everyone's going to notice. And I stuck to that to this day. Like you, I would spend hours on the computer and hours on the phone. I probably recruited every year. I had about between 5 and 7 scholarships I'd turn over, so probably about 7 girls per scholarship. I did not turn anyone down. I mean, if I got to see you and I watched you play, I was always one who would try to give you a chance. Now there are some people out there that, you know, they talk very big. I want to play at a high level of tennis, and you see them play, and you're just like, there is no way. Now that doesn't mean you can't play, but you can play somewhere else. And then there are those. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, you know, earlier in the show, I was talking about, you know, when we look at players, one of the things we do look at is their playing activity. You as a coach, let's say you're looking at 2 different players in Texas, okay? But they have played against each other at the same tournament. Say, out of 10 tournaments they played in, they've played against each other like 4 times. How do you determine which of those 2 you want to say, hey, come to League College and here's what I can offer you versus the other?
I personally, I know this is going to sound a little bit different. I was always called the weird coach at Lee. I was partial to late bloomers and diamonds in the rough, okay? And I might go after the girl that started later in tennis. She may not be winning those matches at the tournament, but she's showing improvement. And I can see after about a minute or two of watching her that she's got the hands for tennis, because I believe that our level, we had to teach footwork. We had to do some of that. But if I didn't have somebody that had the hand-eye coordination to do this, I was in some serious trouble. That doesn't mean that I didn't take some that didn't have the great hand-eye coordination early on, because I needed a great athlete. But as I got through this thing, I recruited better tennis players because of that philosophy. I went after the people that nobody could see. You know what I mean? You could go to a tournament and you might watch somebody lose a tournament match and you would go, okay, if I would spend an hour a week with that young lady knowing what I know about tennis, she's going to get 100 times better. And so that's what I go after. Because these established players, these point chasers, as I like to call them, that spend mom and dad's money on every tournament. They go every weekend to these tournaments so they can make it to the quarterfinals, because half the tournament defaulted out and they get so many points. That does me no good. Those are spoiled kids, and that wouldn't do me any good. Now, you take that same kid that came from, I'll throw this out there, from Burnet, Texas. That's where I'm from. That didn't have a lot of money, whose parents didn't travel a lot, but went to tournaments, and when she was there, made it to a certain round or stayed the whole tournament and competed because she needed the experience. That's somebody that caught my eye. Because I don't want the person that drives around the BMW
mm-hmm.
at 16.
Mm-hmm.
I want the kid that has the junker car, that has three different rackets in their bag, that struggles and makes it, because those are the kids that are going to have some potential as being lifetime athletes in this sport. Those kids that get everything they want for the rest of their lives, they're not going to continue on in that sport. They're going to burn out. They're going to figure out they're doing it because mom rewarded them. You know, mom gave me a new racket because I won the tournament. I got new shoes because I did this, and that's just a load of bull. And I said this last week. I would go after the Michael Jordans. The kids were told, you're not good enough. Because they would say to that person that said that, you're wrong. I am good enough. And I'll show you. If you just give me a chance, I will show you how good I can be. And so the first few years, first 5 years at Lee, I was athletes. Give me great athletes, and I'll turn them into tennis players. And as I got better at it and I started to get a little better tennis player, I said, give me better tennis players, and I'll turn them into great athletes.
For those who are just listening in, again, the number to call in is 714-583-6853. Please don't hesitate to call to ask Jason and I a question regarding college recruiting. And if you have any questions, you know, especially about scholarships, things about, you know, is there a criteria, call in if you have any questions. We would be more than happy to answer them. So, Jason, now, what about the player that you would like that is a late bloomer and all of a sudden played, they started their sophomore year in high school, they practice all summer, and they're doing very well their junior, senior year in high school, to the point that they're like a 2-3-star tennis player that could possibly get a D2 scholarship? As a JUCO coach, how do you tailor your presentation for them to come to, say, Lee College?
Okay, well, our strengths and our selling points were the fall schedule. We played the toughest fall schedule we could find. Because the fall tennis, as you know, AJ, is more about individual tennis than it is team tennis. And the idea for us was just get as many matches as we could. We would try to go to the fall regional. We would try to get somebody out to the small college championships. But it really wasn't our emphasis. And then moving into the spring, we had the motto, have team, we'll travel. Okay, so we didn't turn anyone down. We would play nationally ranked programs of all levels, Division II, Division I. We were fortunate this year. We had SMU on our schedule at Lee College. SMU is ranked nationally in the NCAA Division I realm, and they were traveling to Lee College to play. Now, you don't hear of that very often. And then we played junior college, but we used them sparingly. I was not going to do that. Now, second thing here is the awards that could come with your participation on the Lee College team. And what I used was a national ranking. I used the ability to graduate with a degree. I used the idea that you could become an academic All-American. I used the idea that you could become a distinguished academic All-American. I used the idea that you could become an All-American tennis player. I used the idea that you could play on a national ranked program. I used the idea that you could win conference, that you could win regionals, and that you could win nationals. And as you started to put those together, and I would ask the parents and the kids the same questions, you know, is this something you're interested in? Can you see yourself doing this? I mean, because I don't want someone that can't see themselves holding a tennis trophy. You know, I work with these academy kids, and the other day I asked them, I said, excuse me, how many of you kids have a tennis trophy in your room? And I was shocked. There wasn't a one of them that had a tennis trophy in their room. So I'm sitting there going, my gosh, I've got to teach these kids how to win, you know, rounds in a tournament to win a tournament. Whereas before, I was dealing with kids that had tennis trophies, that liked winning, that wanted to win more often. You know, that was what it was about for me. You can go to Division III college in Indiana, and it may be closer to home, but I don't know if that's a good idea. I mean, you're not going to win a lot. Do you want to win in life, or do you just want to kind of hang out in the middle? I think successful people hang around successful people, right?
No, I agree with that.
AJ?
I agree with that.
You and I are together because we're successful. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've come across people that don't want to be successful. They hang around people that aren't successful. And so you wonder, you say, well, I don't necessarily, they may be a great player, but look at who they're running with. I don't know if I want that attitude on my team. And I ran into that sometimes. I always gave benefit of the doubt and said, you know what, I could help this person, and sometimes you couldn't. I had a young lady from Austin, broke my heart to see her leave. She was a great little player. Some people called her Little Serena when she was out there on the court. And she started hanging around the wrong people, doing the wrong things, making bad choices. But you can't be there with them 24 hours a day. This is what life's about. It's about choices. And I chose success. I enjoy hanging around with people that portray an image of success. And that's in my personal life, and that's in my private life, and that's in my public life.
No, I agree. And just to touch on that a little bit, I remember it has to be 4 years ago now. I was playing back in my hometown. It was a Saturday afternoon drop-in tennis thing, and played with a guy who I played a lot growing up. And you know, he and I were down. We were playing doubles against another couple that I played against as well growing up. And we were down. Actually, we lost to them 4-6 in that doubles match in that first set. And I was upset, you know, because we lost. And I remember the gentleman saying, he goes, AJ, it's okay. You know, sometimes you have to shoot for the bronze medal. You can't shoot for the gold every time. And I'm like, Mark, how can you say that? I mean, if we're just striving for bronze every time, then even though that may be a success in someone's eyes, why not go for the gold and play at that level, you know?
You see, that person has never, that strives for the bronze, has never won a gold medal, you know? I mean, I want the gold medal. I want to finish first. I like the idea of understanding that there is a straight and narrow path that you must follow to get to be number one, and I have an idea that was given to me on how to do this, and so I'm going to follow that path, and I'm not settling for second, and I'm not settling for third or sixth or eighth. That doesn't mean I might not finish there the first few times I go through this, but I'm going to keep working at getting better, and that sounds like you, AJ. I'm going to start here, but remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint, so I'm going to finish in first place in the end. That's what this is about.
Now that you and I have talked about a little bit about recruiting and both of our experiences recruiting and our own perspectives on it, what are your thoughts? I'm sure we're talking about recruiting in multicultural communities for just for a moment.
Yeah.
In Texas, it might be a little bit different than here in the Midwest. not only Concordia, but other schools that I either worked at or been associated with, outreaching or marketing in multicultural communities. I'm not going to say it's a less effort, but I know that it is not at the forefront as much in the Midwest. I can't speak for Texas, but I'm only going to guess that marketing towards multicultural communities is not as difficult, or it could be wrong. What's your, can you provide me a little bit of an insight recruiting in the Southwest?
Hey, it's no secret here in Texas that we have an open border policy. We're taking illegal immigrants, and we're taking legal immigrants of all kinds. And my job as a coach was to get the best tennis players available out there. And we were fortunate in Houston, with the population as diverse as it is, to come across some extremely good families, Hispanic families, Asian families. And this year, the last 2 years, I had my first African-American, and it was a great experience. That young lady brought a huge amount of excitement to our team. She was a strong voice. She was a kind of a leader from the back, but a very determined young lady. What I loved about my Hispanic families was their sense and their value of family. They did not want their daughters traveling far away from home. They wanted them close by so they could spend time with them. And I valued those Hispanic families. Their sense of community, their sense of what is right and wrong always tended to be very, very, very strong. And I also had some experience with an Asian family, much along the lines of the same thing, very family-oriented, wanted their young lady home every weekend to spend time with her, see what she was doing, what's going on, be around brother, be around sister, and those sorts of things. And I would get a little jealous of it sometimes. I always tried to encourage my girls to stay at Lee to be independent, you know, to kind of get away from that a little bit. And what these multicultural families taught me was how important it is to be there for those kids. And I think it's so important because it was passed on. Those types of families within our own family there at Lee helped spread that mentality around. And to have a strong leader is important. To have strong followers is important. To have people that know about family, to have those people that know independence, that mix. And I always compared it to a wheel on a bicycle with spokes. Each year we start out with 9 spokes. And if you lost one of those spokes, the bike wouldn't necessarily run as well as it was supposed to. And we had years where I finished with 6. And that's a hard bicycle to ride, AJ, when you got 6 spokes. I don't know about you. That's pretty tough.
That's true. You and I have talked about this before, that when we want to recruit the best players so our programs can do well in the season, if we want to recruit international players, they will bypass us to go to Division I because they can get the athletic scholarship.
Yeah.
Do you feel, in our earliest discussion, that these same academies, these same tennis facilities, look towards the multicultural communities in those areas and tell them, in order for you to leave your community, you have to have a scholarship. If not, it's over. Do you feel that's what's going on? Because I can say confidently, back in my hometown, in the multicultural community back in my hometown, in basketball, that if you do well as a basketball player here, you will go to University of Illinois to play basketball. If you don't, then go to community college. What sounds like more like, you know, a bad thing, you know? What's your take on that?
Well, as far as the academies go, you know, a lot of the academies that I'm around are driven by money. You know, you got to have the money to go there. You got to have the money to participate. You got to do those things. So if you have an academy out there, you've got to figure out a way to extend some reach into the lower ends of society. And there's a great program out in Palo Alto, East Palo Alto, Tennessee. It's run by a friend of mine, Dave Higaki, and the Stanford people. They figured out a way to get into these minority situations and do a phenomenal job with a huge success rate. If you can do that and lose kind of the ego in regards to I've got to have the prestige of going to the University of Texas, to Texas A&M, to Baylor, Texas Tech, you can do these communities a lot of good because, like we said earlier, lots of scholarship money out there to be used that isn't being used. And these multicultural families are hurt in regards to there's not a huge population that's playing tennis as juniors, and they're not promoting it, you know what I mean? And that's where HAT is going to get step up to the plate here and get these kids more involved. I love their statement here. We're going to get Hispanics, we're going to get African Americans, we're going to get Asians, we're going to get Middle Easterners, and we're going to get them playing tennis. We're going to have a lot of people out there that want to support this, and you better get on our train because we're starting something special. And I think that message is going to resonate all across America because I told Chris this last week, and you could possibly agree with me, I don't think the next great American tennis player is a white person. I really don't. There's no way. It's got to be a Michael Jordan. It's got to be that person that was broken, that hasn't have anything given to them and says, you know what, I can do this better than anybody else, and I think it comes from the minority community, not the majority, as we say. The minorities are strong people. They're the ones that hold this country together. They're the ones that are the average people, and I say this a lot. You know, the world is ruled by average people. When you look at it, it's the average people that run this place, not the elite. And that's what we've got to have a change in philosophy here. How do you feel about that, AJ?
No, I agree with that. When I was first introduced by Chris about HAT, the vision and the mission of HAT, I was on board. I was totally on board with it because I do agree that, you know, both you and I, our tennis idols would probably be white, you know. The John McEnroes, the Woodies of tennis were probably our idols. But when I was growing up, it was them. But it was also like Boopity and Pays, the great Indian doubles team. It's now Andy Ram in Israel.
Iranian American.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, I mean, those are guys I look up to. You know, especially at the University of Illinois, when I was growing up, they had Kevin Anderson of South Africa. They have Rajiv Ram, you know, even though he's from Indiana, but he comes from an Indian family, you know. I mean, those are the guys I looked up to while I was growing up in high school. And for anyone who wants to know more about HAT, you can friend them on Facebook at facebook.com/HATtennis, HAT, H-A-A-T, tennis, all one word. You can also follow them on twitter.com/HAT. And again, it's H-A-A-T, tennis, all one word. You can go there. You can just go on either Facebook and Twitter and provide questions about this show that Jason and I can answer or what's going on with upcoming radio programs on Blog Talk Radio. Go ahead, Jason.
I was just going to say, oftentimes forget about the three of the greatest African-American players, that being Arthur Ashe, who is a phenomenal American citizen, and then Venus and Serena. I mean, these girls have dominated the women's tour for the last 10 or so years, and I hate to see that they're not out there playing right now. Everybody in the tennis world knows that Venus and Serena at 100%, there's not another player out there. Clijsters, Hennen. You want to bring Steffi Graf out of retirement, they're going to have trouble competing with the Williams sisters on that level. Martina Navratilova, I don't see her being able to do the things she did against Venus and Serena, and they're just phenomenal. Broken players from Compton, USA. I don't know. You know, when I grew up, Compton was the gangster rap capital of the world, and you didn't want to be in Compton. Well, these two girls just said, you know what? Like I said, you guys don't know what you're talking about. We can play tennis, and we can do it better than anybody else. And they have.
No, and I agree with that. And there are upcoming players like Ivana King, Madison Keys, a whole plethora of players that no one has heard of. And if you go to the Women's Tennis WTA and ATP websites, you can see these players that are coming through the ranks in the challenger circuit are now exposing at the pro level that are going to overcome the Roger Federers and Rafael Nadals in the tennis world, because not generation, but that group of players are going to be long gone, and these new upcoming players that are not going to be Caucasian, they're going to be coming from Asia and South America has been a dominant force in tennis since 80s and 90s, possibly in the 70s, and I can remember various African players that are not playing anymore that should be, and those are the places that we're going to be looking towards instead of United States and Europe and Australia.
Malvi, Mashona, both of those. Mm-hmm. So Mashona's still trying to make it out there on the tour. Malvi was a great collegiate player, and he went on to be successful in those ranks. You look at the tennis world right now. The Spanish Armada is conquering the world in regards to the men's side. Well, doesn't America have a huge Spanish population or Hispanic population? Shouldn't we have our own Spanish Armada? As far as I know,
no.
I was saying this yesterday. You know, I think it was a great navy that put the Spanish Armada down at the bottom of the ocean. One of the best navies on the planet is the U.S. Navy. So why can't we get our own Armada out there? You know, I mean, come on.
Now, Jason, we have a caller here. Let's see who's on. Hello. Oh, they just hung up. If you're trying to call, please call back. We have a couple of minutes before the show ends. Looking forward to a question or a comment you may have. Sorry to cut you off, Jason, but you're right. I remember, you know, as a coach and instructor, I've always asked myself, why is Spain so good? You know, and I've researched this and observed not only Rafael Nadal when he was coming up the ranks, but Sergio Bruguera, Carlos Moya, Alex Caracha, Felix Mantilla. I'm like, why are these players so good? Besides, you know, they have access to clay. Come to find out, you know, Emilio Sanchez, who was a great tennis player and doubles player, who coached them, you know, has offered to show, like, you know, the Spanish way of playing, you know. And after learning about this, I've used it in my own instruction and coaching for my players about moving to the ball and, you know, getting to the ball early and everything. And it's because of that my clients and my college players do so well.
Well, I'll throw a plug out there on that regard. I think one of the most underutilized coaches in America right now is a friend of Hat's, and that's Dr. Ray Brown. That man understands tennis mathematically, philosophically, physically, mentally, and emotionally better than 99.9% of Americans out there. If you don't know who that man is, you need to get on his webpage. You need to look that man up. He knows what he's talking about as far as American tennis goes. And somebody needs to start listening to that man.
Cannot agree more. Less than 30 seconds left. So we should wrap up. For those of you who are just listening, thank you for listening. Hopefully we can answer your questions next time. Please visit at Fizzit had on Facebook and Twitter. So, Jason, thank you for joining me today, and we'll do this a week from today.
I can't wait, AJ. It was good to visit with you on the radio for sure. People don't know you and I talk on the phone as well, so we have to stop our conversations because we could go in too well. So, you know,
I know, right?
Yeah.
So the show just stopped. So.
Very good.
That was a good show.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. I was excited to have the caller, and then it went down a little bit. That's the way it goes. Next week there'll be more.
Yeah, let's hope. You know, I've done radio shows before where I just go in and I get questioned and then do what I need to do. This is my first time doing something like this. So,
yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, it's very good. We'll just keep up the good work. It'll grow, and that's what it's got to be. So each week, just a little bit more, you know?
Exactly. So let's touch base again. We can either continue on the same topic or do something a little bit differently.
Yeah, we'll see if Chris maybe has something he wants us to do.
Yeah, we can do that. We can see what he wants. So.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, well, take care, and I'll be in touch with you again soon.
All right, Jason.
All right. Bye-bye.